And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and the rest of today's show is an attempt to understand lobbying from the lobbyist's point of view. If there's something you've always wanted to know about lobbying but been too afraid to ask, now would be a good time to muster up the courage. Call 816-235-2888 to talk with the lobbyists who are joining us in the studio now. First, let me introduce Bill Sneed. He runs Postanelli's Topeka office, and he's the go-to lawyer in the firm for government affairs projects and insurance-related issues. Bill, is that another way of saying you're a lobbyist?
Generally, that's got it covered. I am the resident lobbyist for Postanelli.
And primarily for insurance companies?
Initially, that's how I started my career. But today, our firm has a pretty broad base of clients in most major areas.
Is lobbyist a word you feel you have to avoid, or would you shout it proudly from the mountaintops?
I make no apologies about my job. People have a constitutional right to petition their government, and although some lobbyists have gotten into trouble and makes good press, by and large, we go to work like everybody else does, and we are there representing our clients and giving them a voice in front of the elected officials.
How do you define lobbying?
It's the ability to present an argument or an issue to an elected official and attempt to gather their support on the position that you're supporting.
I'd like to ask the same question of Kimberly Swati. She's a lobbyist for Gentcher Swati Public Affairs. Welcome to the show, Kimberly.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
How do you define lobbying?
Probably much like Bill, in the sense that you're just talking with legislators, elected officials, policymakers. So lobbying is not just before the legislative branch. It can also be before state agencies, before the executive. Educating them, talking to them about the issues of your clients, their needs, their interests, and hoping to gain consensus on strong policy positions.
Tell me about yourself and your background. I want to know how you grew up and what you wanted to be, the pathway to being a lobbyist.
Well, so first and foremost, proud Kansas Cityan, seventh generation. It's a wonderful, wonderful community. I think sitting around the dinner table in the evenings, my family just talked a lot about current events, history, policy, politics, and sports. So you had to be able to know a little something about all of that. And when I was in high school, we fortunately won an odd trip to Washington, D.C. And I remember coming up the escalator from Farragut North and thinking, oh my goodness, wow, this is quite the place. And so it put together, you know, the interest that I had from a young age, talking politics and policy, and then being around kind of the epicenter of where it all came about. And
so you kind of fell in love with Washington, D.C. as a high schooler?
Yes.
And have you spent time in D.C.?
I did. Worked in Washington, D.C., but Kansas is my home. And so wanted to come back here and see if we couldn't make a difference here in my home state.
So who are your clients? Who do you represent?
So I'm very lucky. I get to work with some wonderful organizations. First and foremost, I represent all of the municipally owned electric, natural gas, water, and wastewater utilities. So community-owned utilities. They play a critical role in providing the absolute needs of, from an infrastructure standpoint, of a lot of our communities, smaller communities around the state. And then even our larger ones like Kansas City Board of Public Utilities. Then I also represent the entire wind industry. So from the developers themselves and the operations folks to the manufacturers. And then the community foundations, of which the Greater Kansas City Community Foundation is a part.
How long have you been doing this?
About 20 years, but I've been lobbying in Kansas for about 15 years.
What about you, William? Who are your clients and how long have you been at it?
We have a core of about 12 or 14 clients here in this area. Some of the major ones are KU Hospital, Kansas Speedway, Kansas Entertainment, which is the entity that owns the casino in Kansas City. Then we represent some national clients, State Farm, America's Health Insurance Plans, and then some smaller regional type clients.
What's your background? I mean, what has led you here to being a lobbyist, this most maligned of position?
I worked in government in the state. for a state agency, left there, went into private practice. The firm I was with had founded an association of lawyers. The lobbyist or the individual who did the lobbying for that association decided that he'd had enough of that. And since I was the low man on the totem pole, and since I knew where the capital was, I got elected.
Knowing just, your way around.
Yeah. And that's how it kind of started. And I've been doing it for 29 years.
Well, as we've already acknowledged, public opinion of lobbying isn't what most of us would call favorable. Politicians actually campaign and win on promises of not caving in to pressure from lobbyists. The perception, I think, is that you guys represent special interests over and above the greater good, and that you have access to maybe some special tools in leveraging those interests. How would you respond to that idea? We'll start with you, Bill.
Well, first of all, every American has a right to petition his or her government. I think one of the biggest problems is that the politicians need to spend more time on educating its citizenry and the importance of being involved in government, whether it be casting a vote or serving your community, whatever it may take. What we do is no different, if you will, from anyone who represents a person, whether it be in front of a court, you represent someone in front of a state agency. All we're doing is being hired to represent their interest and presenting it to somebody, and I use that in two words, somebody, to effectuate a result. I lead the double life. People hate lawyers and people hate lobbyists. And so I guess I've just gotten thick-skinned over it. I've heard all the jokes.
You love being a butt of a joke.
Yeah,
that was going to be my theory.
That must be it. So I don't apologize for what I do. I work hard. I'm involved in my community. I've raised a family.
Do you believe personally in the causes that you represent? Is that important to you?
Certainly it would be an issue if someone brought to me a proposal that for whatever reason I couldn't support. But by and large, you're trained as a lawyer, you know, you don't get to necessarily pick your clients, and you have to represent them in the best way you can.
Kimberly, what are your thoughts on this issue of special interest on one side and the greater good on the other, and just this idea of who has a voice, who has leverage?
Absolutely. Everyone has a voice in the democratic process. They really do. And there's five different types of lobbyists. There's your corporate lobbyist, kind of your in-house lobbyist, a contract lobbyist. Then there's association lobbyists or cause lobbyists. And then a citizen can lobby. Really, all you're doing in lobbying is communicating. And whether you're sitting down and having a conversation over coffee with your elected official or you're going to a town hall meeting, that's all a form of lobbying.
First piece, the sitting down and having coffee, is the piece that it's one piece anyway, that I think a lot of private citizens don't necessarily feel they can get. Like the typical person just calling up an elected official and saying, I'd love to have coffee. Maybe that does work. I don't know. But I admit I've never tried.
So there's a difference between lobbying at the federal level and state level. And even there's a difference in lobbying in different states. I used to lobby in multiple states, and now I lobby in Kansas specifically. And Kansas is a little unique, but not that different from a lot of Midwestern states where you can. We are a citizen legislature, and so you can just pick up the phone and call your legislator, send him an email, send, you know, he or her an email and say, you know, hey, I'll see you at the town forum, or can you go grab coffee, or you see him at the grocery store and you have a conversation. And I'm sure at some point in that conversation you're elucidating a policy preference one way or another for some issue.
Are there kinds of pressure that lobbyists are in a position to apply that individual citizens are not?
As a lobbyist, part of our job is to be around the building, to be around legislators and staff often. And so then we develop a relationship with them, and it helps us create an understanding about the issues and an awareness. So from that standpoint, there is that relationship. But I'll tell you, from conversations with legislators, you know, we provide a lot of information. So we are a value to them in that regard. And it is fact-based information, because the second you stray from providing facts and good information, your credibility is shot and your ability to be effective in your job is diminished significantly. But, you know, any individual can speak, you know, with a legislator at any time. And a legislator values hearing from their constituents far more than they, you know, want to hear from us.
Walk me through some of the specific things you do in your work as a lobbyist, like on a normal day, some of the things you might be found doing.
When the legislature's in session, you know, the schedule and the hours are long and pretty crazy, but very interesting. If you enjoy learning, you're going to learn a lot. And so on any given day, I'll attend committee hearings. I'll speak with legislators. I'll draft letters to my clients or to legislators on behalf of my clients articulating, you know, specific positions about a piece of legislation that's been introduced. In the morning, we get a bill packet that has all of the bills that have been introduced or bills that have been amended through the day. And so it's part of my job to go through and read those bills. And, you know, buried in a 40-page tax bill, there might be four or five words that could, you know, fundamentally impact the interests of one of my clients. And so it's important that I go through and read all of that. So that's probably a sampling, but Bill can...
What you're trying to do is on the outlook for anything that might affect either positively or negatively your client base, and you do that by virtue of just simply being at the Capitol. I mean, that's one difference that we might have against when you talk about your average citizen. Doesn't stop them. There are a lot of citizens that come to the Capitol and spend a lot of time that aren't, you know, professional lobbyists, if you will. But then in the off season, your clients pretty much dictate your workload. If in 2016 I have a client that may want to get a bill passed, we start working on that next month.
That mean? What is working on a bill that you want to get?
Well, you draft it. Number one is you have to draft the bill.
So the lobbyist is involved in drafting language for a bill?
On behalf of my client, we can be, yes. Sometimes legislators draft bills.
That's an interesting thing, because that is something that I've heard a lot of controversy and concern around, is the idea of lobbyists actually drafting legislation, not just pushing ideas forward or articulating a point, but coming up with the language that's actually in the bills. That was something that was being discussed around the time of when Dodd-Frank was in the news. The New York Times and Mother Jones discovered that the language of the legislation was almost identical to the language suggested by lobbyists who represented banks. And when you're talking about financial reform, we like to think that our elected representatives are writing and debating laws in service of voters and citizens. Do you know what I mean?
Well, simply because you draft something doesn't mean that they're going to take it lock, stock, and barrel. It's no different than me representing a client and drafting a contract. I mean, that's your starting point. And then you go through the process. You deal with legislators. You show them, and they may not like this or not like that. Legislation doesn't just generate in a vacuum. It starts somewhere.
Kimberly, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's actually a very good question. And I think this year, at least in Kansas, is a really good example about how the role of a lobbyist is important. Because a lot of times, as legislators are contemplating legislation, as bills are drafted, there are a lot of unintended consequences associated with specific words. And it's not until the bills are introduced or put forward that, and the hearing is held, that you can really see the lie today and really begin to flesh out the consequences, both positive or negative. So a perfect example would be this session when they were working on the tax bill, and they had a hearing, you know, on an issue that would have reinstated the state sales tax on local governments and purchasing of building supplies. So at its face value, you can say, okay, well, that's one way to generate new revenue. Well, then when the hearing comes and you have, you know, whether it's the public library, Kansas Hospital, you know, on and on and on to my clients, you know, we're building a lot of new wastewater treatment facilities or retrofitting those facilities because of state or federal mandates. Well, then now all of a sudden we have to increase the cost of the project by 6% because we have state sales tax associated with it. Well, you know, again, it's the unintended consequences of those bills. So it is important, I think, to have a lot of, when you're crafting legislation, you need a lot of eyes looking at the bill itself as it moves through the process in order to make sure that, you know, it doesn't have significant harmful unintended consequences or positive. But I think the more eyes on legislation, the better. And again, as Bill said, a lobbyist drafting a piece of legislation is merely a starting point.
So then if people want to sort of point the finger, if there's some sort of over adopting of that language, according to some, that would be on the politician, on the legislator.
And I'm trying to think of a specific instance. Very seldom would you take a piece of legislation that, you know, we drafted, and we don't draft the bills. We just might draft a handful of words or change a handful of words in existing law. But very seldom do you see what you start with being what you end up with.
That's correct. Yeah, and there's a variety of ways. I mean, there are legislative organizations, NCSL and NCOIL, all of the alphabets that they've got out there that generate and create bills that ultimately can come back.
We've got to take one last break. Call 816-235-2888 if there's been something you've always wanted to ask a lobbyist but have been too afraid to ask. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to Central Standard. Don't go away. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with lobbyists Kimberly Swati and Bill Sneed. They're here to help us understand lobbying from a lobbyist's perspective after a really long, arduous legislative session in Kansas. Guys, talk to me about the climate for lobbying in Kansas, first of all. What stands out about it?
You mean during this last session? Is that what you're, or just in general?
Overall.
When you finish a session like that, all you want to do is go sleep for a week. But, the session went really, except for the tax bill, which got all the attention, the session was a pretty standard session. The budget got done pretty matter-of-factly. The cats and rat type bills got handled one way or the other.
Cats and rat type bills.
Bills that people in the media really don't care about, but our clients have concerns about.
Why are they called that?
I don't know. Somebody dreamed that up 100 years ago, and probably somebody like Pat Hubble, who's the dean of the lobbyists, probably dreamed that up or something. But I don't know if unfortunate is the right word, but all of the attention on the tax bill really doesn't do justice to really how well the overall session went for just about everybody.
So are you saying that there's one piece of this that was out of the ordinary and so out of the ordinary that it consumed all of our attention, but that otherwise things went as usual?
I would. I don't know if Kimberly agrees, but yes, I think by and large it was a pretty standard session.
Yeah. Just really long and really, the consequences, I guess, that there are people who were expecting furlough and that kind of thing.
I think we dealt with big issues this session, and certainly that culminated in the tax bill. And, of course, that went way long, and, you know, that is what it is. But all things considered, for the amount of work that was done this session, it was a pretty standard session. They did do big bills, but they worked through those big bills, you know, with a fair amount of, sure, not ease, but they worked through them. There were, but again, the main issue of this session was, of course, the tax issue, and that was just that's a totally different beast.
When the legislative session runs as long as this one did, how does that affect you and personally, and just your ability to be effective in your work and efficient?
Well, when they're there, we're there. And so if they start at 8 o'clock in the morning and they don't adjourn until 4:38 the next morning, then we're there. And inevitably, when they pass a tax package at 4:38 in the morning, then our clients, they need to know through the process as it's being debated, but then immediately after final action is taken. And so then, you know, your schedule is that of the the schedule followed by the legislature.
On our Kansas Legislature podcast, State House Blend, a guest said that lobbyists at some point in this last session were just like, this is ridiculous. We're not going to dinner. Get back to work and do your job, like two legislators. Is that true?
There probably was some of that. I mean, you know, but by and large, those same legislators may hold the keys to your client's car. So I don't know how brazen anyone would have said that. You know, maybe it's just because I've been around long enough, but messing around with taxes is hard. It's hard work. And it doesn't matter who's in charge, Republican, Democrat, Independent. It's just really, really hard work. And I guess no one in recent time had been around to see something like that. So that's why many people were, you know, kind of like, what really is going on?
And I think, you know, we had to do a tax bill a couple of years ago. But again, that was in the time of the Great Recession. And then you had to do a tax bill in 2002, which to that point was the record holder for the longest session. And that went 107 days. And they had to do a tax package then. So it had definitely been a solid